Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Follow to Lead podcast, a Christian leaders podcast helping everyday faith-driven entrepreneurs and executives seal their identity in Christ so that they can release control and embrace peace. Brought to you by Greg Fay Insurance. If you haven't talked to my man Greg yet, do so today. You're not going to want to miss the opportunity for the coverage you need and the customer service you deserve. Today on the podcast, so excited for this special interview. It's not very often I get to do speak to two of the three authors of a book. Ryan Skoog, Peter Greer wrote a book called Lead with Prayer. It's about the spiritual habits of world-changing leaders. What I love about this conversation is that Ryan and Peter do a great job of sharing how they came to their research, right? How do they figure out exactly how they came to their kind of conclusions as it comes to prayer? I think you're going to love this conversation. There's so much to offer it. If you do, do me a favor, share this episode with a friend. Also, you may have noticed a little bit of a name change. We're going to talk more about that this week on the Deeper Dive. So if you're already subscribed, don't worry. It's still coming right to your podcast player. The Follow to Lead podcast, twice a week, every week. Now, without any further ado, here's my conversation with Ryan and Peter. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited today to have authors, leaders, and speakers of the latest book, Lead with Prayer. Guys, Ryan, Peter, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
So excited.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Well, one of the things I'd like to start off with is kind of a macro picture of kind of what brought us here. And I like to do that by asking a calling question. So, Peter, I'm going to start with you. How would you describe the calling that God has placed on your life?
Yeah, you know, I grew up with this incredible gift that I had parents that were involved in full-time vocational ministry, and there was not a difference in the way that they lived their lives and the words and the way that they engaged with Scripture. And that was really powerful for me to see as a kid. So I had this growing interest in missions, and I also had this interest in business and entrepreneurship. And it was when I was studying in Moscow that for the first time I saw the ways in which these two things came together. So I really look at that moment, studying in Moscow, where this interest in missions, this interest in global entrepreneurship came together, and that very much did set the course of my life, what I've been trying to do to invest in the dreams of families around the world as we proclaim and live the gospel.
Wow, that's awesome. Ryan, what about you? Same question. How would you describe the calling that God has placed on your life?
Yeah, similar to Peter, I grew up in a family where, travel family, and my parents never took me to Disney World, but they took me to refugee camps as a young kid to be able to see what's really going on in the world. And it just broke my heart for specifically the tough places of the world. And so I've been working for decades and decades now where it's, you know, war and persecution and extreme poverty and trafficking and all of these things in the nexus of the tough places. That's where you see miracles and heroes and the kingdom of God breaking out in miraculous ways. And I've been a part of that ever since, both as a business owner and then as a running a nonprofit. So in both ways.
It's pretty incredible to think that there are three of you. Cameron couldn't be here today, but there are three of you who kind of put your heads together to come up with this book. How do three of very high octane leaders get together and say, we should spend a large chunk of our time, hundreds of hours, and put together a book? How'd you guys meet? How'd you guys get married to each other, so to speak?
Never been asked that way. Peter, you want to start? Okay. There's a deeper question that launched the book. And the question was, what is fueling the explosive nature of the global church? And if we sat at the feet of the exploding global church and said, can you teach us how to follow Jesus? And instead of finding a leadership principle, we started noticing that real fuel is a prayer life. And that stirred our hearts. And so, and I started reading the scriptures where it says in Samuel, where he says, God forbid as a leader that I sin by failing to pray for you. And it just had this convicted moment where I looked at my bookshelf and I had all these books on how leaders lead, but no book told me how leaders pray. And I started talking to Peter about it. We've been friends. We both work in some really difficult areas in the world, and we've connected on in several countries, actually partnering together. And said, Peter, would you want to go on this journey of basically asking leaders around the world, global leaders and in the United States, what is your daily prayer habit like? What fuels the incredible ministry you have? And Peter promptly said no. And so that's how the marriage started. Is rejection.
Yeah. No, that's not exactly what I said, Ryan. I said no, but I would love to figure out how to help you in your book on this, Ryan. At the time, I was someone that would have said, I believe in the power of prayer. I understand this is really important, but there was a disconnect between what I said and what I was doing. Turns out I'm not alone. If you look at the prayer lives of leaders, the prayer lives of pastors, the vast majority are dissatisfied with their prayer life. Say, I would love to grow in that. And so the changing moment was the next morning when I ironically perhaps said I probably should spend some time praying about this. And the sense from there was don't miss out on the journey. Not that you've figured it all out, not that you have something to contribute other than this is going to be an amazing journey. Be curious and let's learn. So very much I came at this as someone eager to learn and who really resonated with the prayer, the request that the disciples came to Jesus with. And what did they say? They said, Jesus, Lord, teach us to pray. And that really has been the posture behind the research and the posture behind this book.
And beyond that, Cam got involved when he works for one of the largest foundations in the country that actually commissioned a study on the prayer life of some of the great leaders in great organizations in America specifically. And the data that came back is we've got a lot of work to do when it comes to prayer in America. And then yet when we started talking to the global church, that was the eureka. When they say the word prayer and we say the word prayer, we're talking about very different things. And that was an incredible journey. So we did 100 hours of interviews with leaders in 6 different continents, whose ministries will span 100 different countries. And we started noticing patterns of any leader that decides to really start being intentional about their prayer life. It seems like the Holy Spirit leads them to a similar prayer life, whether it's someone working in a refugee camp in a war zone or a billionaire financier in New York City. They had very similar prayer lives. And so what really emerged and became the book was the patterns that we noticed. Each of those patterns became one of the chapters. And that was it's been one of the greatest journeys of my life, learning how leaders pray around the world.
I'm curious because I have a family, and I think both of you guys have families as well. Like, what happens when you come home from your already very busy lives and say, hey, family, I'm going to spend 100 hours doing something that I may or may not actually ever get published or paid for? How does that work in your guys's? Tell me how that process went. What'd the people in your life think when you decided to go down this journey?
I don't think we knew what we were getting into. It wasn't 100 hours. It was just, let's interview a few people and see what can happen. And oh, it's been wonderful. And then you sit down with a publisher and they're like, okay, we want this. You're like, oh, wait, what? And that's my journey. I feel like it was a little bit like God going to Abraham saying, hey, let's go to Ur. Okay, what's in Ur? I'll tell you when you get there. And then now we got to Ur, we're going to Palestine. Wait, what? And now that we get there, we're going to go to Egypt. And, you know, so it's just one of those moments where God just brought us along on the journey, not knowing where the end of it was going to be.
Peter, how was the experience for you?
Yeah, you know, I think the one piece that I am enormously grateful that Laurel understands, this process of writing, it brings life, it brings depth, it brings joy, and the possibility of joining with some friends, Ryan and Cam. And you asked a question earlier, what is it like with 3 different people bringing their voices together? The secret ingredient in this whole thing is Jill Heise. She joined the team, and she is the one who did the incredible work of making sure our voices blended. And I wish we could have some before Jill and after Jill sections of the book. She has done so much to make this the book that it is. So that's the other component. But yeah, my wife, Laurel, she was very supportive in this. And I'm also grateful I work for an organization that does provide time and space. They know this is beneficial to me. And so I feel like I've got the incredible gift of support at home and support with my family. And as long as I start my days early and do most of my writing on airplanes, it all works on that. So, but just as Ryan said, I mean, this has been the joy. My prayer life has been profoundly impacted in a way that has never been to this point in my life. And it really was this opportunity to listen, to learn. And then the book is designed in such a way that it is practices. It's designed not just to be interesting stories, but then it's designed to say, hey, try it. Try these new practices. Try these new postures in prayer. And you just might discover greater joy and depth as a result. So that is certainly what has happened in my life. There is far greater joy. There is far greater, just depth in this incredible journey of prayer.
Yeah, one of the things that we say around here a lot is that information plus application equals transformation, right? And I think that what you guys have put together here with the prayer tool at the end of every chapter is certainly transformational. But Ryan, I would be remiss if I didn't go back and ask you to tell us the difference between the global prayer life and the North American church prayer life. How would you define the differences in that? Because most of the people listening here are going to be your classic North American business leaders, entrepreneurs, Christian men and women who are trying to lead people and follow Christ. And what we say is like live a life of integrity. What do we not know about the global church that you guys discovered?
Yeah, so I'll just give an example. The first interview of the whole book was with Rosabel, and she has been serving for 3 decades in literally in a war zone, and serving thousands of children with landmines and mortars going around. And she just walks around with such joy, incredible strength. And I started asking her, "Mama Rosabel, tell me about your prayer life." And she goes, "Oh, Ryan, I just love Jesus." She said, "When I was 18. I had no money, but I wanted to tithe. And I had no currency but time. And so I thought, I'll just start tithing my time." And so I've been praying about 2 to 2.5 hours a day for the past 30 years, tithing my time. And I thought, oh, so when you say prayer and I say prayer, we've got a lot to learn from the global church. And she talks about this enjoyment of just walking and enjoying a friendship with Jesus. And not just right away joining in and praying all these requests or anything like that. It all just comes out of friendship. And this is how she's been able to serve with joy in one of the worst places I've ever been in my life for 3 decades and be one of the happiest people I've ever met in my truly joyful people I've ever met in my life. And so that was the very beginning of our introduction to, oh, There's a different world out there when they start seeking God in these types of difficult situations. One group was like, "Oh, I feel like we're supposed to pray for this miracle, and so we're going to have round the clock prayer until it happens." And so they scheduled round the clock prayer for 30 hours, and there's always somebody praying, and then a miracle happened in their city. So things like that, when they say we should pray about something, for us it's like, okay, a couple sentences. For them, let's do round the clock prayer for 30 hours. Like things like that, where you really run into a mentality of let's call down heaven in a way that's significant and different than I've encountered in my life.
Peter, how did you guys come up with a list of people that you were going to get in front of? Like, obviously, you guys are both global travelers, and you guys are connected to leaders, and Cam's connected to leaders. But how did you imagine? This is a pretty stout list. What was the process like of like, oh, let's get in front of all of these incredible humans?
I completely agree with you, and I can't believe some of the people that answered our emails or our calls.
It's so true.
What? Oh, and you know, I think, yeah, certainly looking at connections and asking people, but I just, I mean, not to be trite, but this was one of the early ones. Lord, would you lead us to the people that would have something to say? And not only led, but then again, they just answered our call. For me, I've, you know, read lots from Johnny Erickson Tada over the years. I saw her work interviewing her and maybe even was the same words, but hearing her speak them and actually believing that she truly does say, I will take my loss of movement. I will take my pain if it results in me being closer to Jesus. I mean, that is a very different perspective. And you asked the previous question about what's the difference. That is a major theme that we kept hearing again and again. It is not. Yeah. The vibrant prayer lives were not fueled by, Lord, answer my prayers. That is not what the vibrant prayer lives look like. They were much more, Lord, help me be close to you. Help me to see what you're doing in this situation. Help me to... And it is a very different type of prayer when it's no longer, here's the list of what I would like you to do for me. That is part of it, of course, to present our requests with thanksgiving. But it is not the full story of what a vibrant prayer looks like.
Yeah, and one of the beautiful things was how similar these prayer lives were. When we got to talk to Francis Chan and John Mark Comer and John Ortberg, and like you said, John Erickson Tada, and all of these incredible leaders, Mark Batterson, John Tyson, at how similar their prayer lives were. And it wasn't what we thought. It was a friendship first type of prayer life. They just like Rosabelle, she would go on a walk and just enjoy Jesus, her friend. We studied Mother Teresa, same idea. She said, I just want to sit and be and listen first. And you talk to Francis Chan, who's crazy busy, and he says, nope, I go on a walk, and I just hang out with my friend, Jesus. And so these similarities amongst all of these incredible people was so powerful to see, whether it's, you know, across the world or in like I said, a New York financier who gave us the term wasting time with God. He's over billions of dollars in capital, one of the busiest people I ever met. And he prays like a monk. He has scheduled prayer time throughout the day and multiple times a day where he says, I just waste time, because that's what friends do. They waste time together. And so he schedules in time to waste time, what he calls it, with Jesus. And God gives him insight into investments and insight into how to run things and all this stuff. But he said the best part is just being with Jesus. And that was so powerful to hear.
Hey guys, just pausing this conversation with Ryan and Peter to remind you to check out Elevate Real Estate. My man over there, Trent Bargy, does an incredible job of helping you find your dream home. Whether it's investment properties or you're looking to make a move to your forever home, call Trent today. You need to connect with him. He wants to help you. The link is in the show notes. It's elevate.kw.com. Talk to Trent today. Don't wait. Also, special thanks to our incredible sponsor, Five Star Home Services. If you haven't heard me talk about Five Star before, they're family-owned and operated, been around Ohio for decades. They're HVAC, plumbing, and electrical all in one. And one of the things I love about this company is their model of what they call profit on purpose. Profit on Purpose is about giving back to the community, and that's why I love partnering with them. Go to myfivestarhomeservices.com. There's a link in the show notes. Don't let spring catch you off guard. Get that tune-up that you need for your HVAC system today. As always, guys, so thankful for our sponsors. If you want to know more about what's happening in the Follow to Lead world, make sure you sign up for our Life and Leadership newsletter. Follow the number 2leadcoaching.com. Now, let's finish up this conversation with the team from Lead with Prayer.
How have your prayer lives changed since this journey? Like, give me a before and after. Practical. Let's get into the weeds a little bit, too. Like, how have you transformed? Ryan, why don't you kick us off? Where were you before? Where are you now? If you, that may be an unfair question. If it is, I'm sorry. We can edit it out.
Absolutely not. No, this is the question we asked everyone else. What's your prayer life? We have to be able to share our own. But no, for me, the intentionality of of mapping out a day with God. Before I'd have a prayer time, and now it's roll out of bed on my knees, and then have a bit of a walk time of friendship. And then what do I do in the middle of the day? How do I end my day with maybe an examine or praise, and having crafting a day with Jesus, and then being really intentional about, you know, for now I've been like on Mondays, I'm really focusing on praying for my families, and there's on Fridays, I'm really focused on praying for salvation for my neighbors. And Sunday, I don't ask God for anything. I just sit and be the way that we've learned friendship first. Start the week, not even asking for a single thing, and just saying, God, I'm going to pretend like you've answered every one of my prayer requests. I just want to be with you. And that's really transformed my prayer life in so many different ways, both the attitude, the frequency, and then expanding the topics of what I talk to Jesus about. You know, it used to be so limited.
Peter, what about you?
Yeah, I think similar to Ryan. I mean, there is significant and specific ways that this has impacted our prayer lives. Ryan talked about the personal. I'll maybe talk a little bit about the organizational, because that's the second part of the book, is really saying, how can we as leaders grow? How can we model before we multiply? But then also, how do we create workplaces? How do we pray with others? And that was maybe a big difference. If you look at Google and you just type in prayer, almost all the images are of solo. It almost always is an individual activity. And yet the global church taught us this is actually a collective activity. There is something about coming together. So after we have our own growth in prayer, how do we with others be on this journey together? And just one very specific example is we would pray before our leadership retreat, and then we would get into the real work, you know, and for the first time as we were working on this, we said, no, what if the entire purpose of why we're getting together as a leadership team is to pray? What if that is the work? And so instead of a little prayer pixie dust that we want to sprinkle at the beginning and end of our time, what if we actually had much more focus, much more intentionality about the prioritization of prayer? And that's an awesome experience to have that time with others, even for churches, even for Christian organizations. Our experience is maybe there's more that we can explore in that in-depth prayer. So that's one thing. And then maybe another one is just the tools. Ryan created this incredible pack of talk about low tech, but they're just prayer cards, prompts that are written. And the benefit of that is you're not on your device, you're not there, and to have these very clear prompts, it's been a really, really incredible tool to actually have more time in focus with a wider variety of things that we're thinking about and praying about. And again, just great joy, great delight in that. Not the rushed, not the hurried, not the I'm about to fall asleep, but with more intentionality and more exploration of this beautiful depth and mystery of prayer.
And one on the organizational side, I just wanted to jump off of that. Peter, one of the interviews we had was with a guy, John Tyson, actually, in his Australian accent. He goes, mate, where's prayer line item in your budget? And I said, huh? He said, you told me you value it. If you value something, it makes it to your P&L. And I thought, oh. And so we started investing in 24/7 prayer rooms in every one of the countries that we serve in Venture. And it's been awesome seeing what God has done as a result of answers to incredible miracles. And the work has increased in beautiful, miraculous ways that can only be pointed to God intervening as we've been investing in prayer and actually letting your staff know, you can take some time that we're paying you during the day and you can pray. Gary Haugen models that at IJM so well. He said that they totaled it up. I think millions of dollars have been invested in prayer. And it's just a huge conviction to go, oh, yeah, it just never dawned on me investing in prayer. It needs to make it to the P&L.
One of the things that I appreciate about the book is that balance between the actual prayer and then the leadership. And in the introduction, there's the kind of the four common approaches to prayer and leadership quadrant. I'm wondering if you could just, because there's so many leaders listening right now, if you could take us through the four quadrants and talk a little bit about how that looks.
You want to do that one? You want to do that one, Peter?
Yeah. So essentially, it's a 2x2 on two different axes. One is on leadership, and the other is on prayerfulness. And so if you can imagine these four different quadrants, and maybe we could put this in the show notes if anyone wants to actually see what it looks like. But in the four different quadrants, you have the bottom left, which would be the low levels of leadership, low emphasis on prayerfulness. And that just leads to frustration, right? That person. But it's also possible, and this book is not targeting the upper left, which is like lots of prayerfulness, but not the formal positions of leadership. And that's like the prayer support team. Like that's an important and valuable one, but that's where most of the prayer books are written to in that quadrant. And we really were trying to say, no, what does it look like to explore the upper right quadrant, which is that growth in leadership, areas of responsibility, and a focus and an emphasis on prayerfulness. And so that is the lead with prayer quadrant that we're exploring. How do we grow more into that? Yeah, and then the bottom right perhaps is where most of us spend too much time, which is as we've grown in our leadership journey, we've had more and more leadership. We've had more and more responsibility, but we have had less and less time set apart for prayer. And if you look at a number of studies, it seems to indicate that for most people, as they go throughout their career, they increase in leadership. They do not increase in prayerfulness. And so what does that mean? That means that we've got a lot of leaders that are not rooted in an abiding sense of prayer, that are running organizations. And what does that mean for the collective witness? What does that mean for the souls of the leaders? And what does that mean for the organizations that they lead? If we have what we believe is significant, roles of leadership that are not supported by vibrant prayer lives.
Yeah, and Jesus actually modeled the opposite. If you look at the mentions of when Jesus withdrew away to pray, as the crowds got bigger, as the responsibilities increased, he prayed more, not less. There was more times of withdrawing away and praying mentioned both in Luke and Mark than less. And so his model was as the responsibilities of leadership increase for a Christian leader, your prayer life should increase, not decrease. And we're seeing a little bit of the opposite. And we're asking the question, imagine what would happen if God's leaders truly became praying leaders and started leading praying organizations. It could change everything.
So I have an unfair question to ask both of you, which I'm really excited about. And which interview was your favorite? Ryan, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, man.
I told you it was unfair.
Yeah. No, I would say my interview with Rosabelle that kicked it off was probably my favorite, because when she closed her eyes and just prayed and just said the word Jesus, something moved in my heart. She was talking to someone she really knew. And it stirred in my heart of like, I want to know Jesus like that. I need to know Jesus like that. So that was the first one that kicked it off. It was so powerful. But then I'm going to bookend it. And the very last one was with Mark Batterson. And he shared about how he was able to look in his prayer journal of his grandfather and see that his life is actually an answer to prayer, specific prayer after specific prayer of his grandfather. And this is a bit of how we end the book, of talking about how prayer is generational. And as leaders, we can pray prayers that will lead, go into generations and affect the world even long after we're gone. And that gets exciting when you think about, I'm not just praying for now, I can be praying for generations.
Peter, what about you?
Yeah, so I already mentioned Johnny Erickson Tada. That was a standout moment for me. The other one that I'll mention is maybe a surprising one. But, you know, how often have you had conversations with your friends about their prayer life? Like, really, this is not a common topic that you have. And so the interview
what's your social security number? What's your prayer life?
It's not something you lead with. And so one of the great joys of this, and this is actually something that we encourage people to do, is don't just read the book on your own, like experience it with others. And so the interview that I would say carry this book is learning with and from Ryan and Cam and Jill. And in our lives in real time, we're learning about these ideas and then we're practicing them. And then some crazy things are happening in our lives, in our hearts, in our practices, in our organizations. And I mean, we do not have time, but I think about Jill and several of these moments and what we experienced. We felt like we were in it in certain moments of writing this book. Anyway, so I think of that interview, of being the interview of interviewing how these ideas are being put into practice as a real highlight, and getting to know Ryan and Cam and Jill, even though we've known each other for a long time. There's a different level of knowledge and relationship that has come through this exploration and through the prayers together.
And on that note, most powerful chapters came out of a misinterpretation. I wrote an idea of saying, "Hey, Peter, what if we did a chapter on a leader's character is formed on their knees?" And I just meant formed on our knees as a metaphor. And Peter goes, "Oh, we want to do a chapter on posture." And so he wrote a whole chapter on what it posture and getting on your knees and how important it is and all that stuff. And I thought this is going to be about character. I just used on your knees as a metaphor. And as it turned out, posture and prayer does matter. And I started incorporating different posture practices in my prayer life, whether it's getting on my knees or just opening my hands or different things. And that was literally a kind of like a Holy Spirit, you know, miss of the baton. In a sense that he wrote this entire chapter that was not, I wasn't thinking about it. And yet it came out to be one of the more powerful chapters as well. So it's been an incredible journey that way.
I love that. Okay. I have one more question for you, kind of the big question at the end. But before I ask it, I know that my leaders are going to want to learn more about you guys, about the movement, about the additional resources. Where is the best place to go to pick up a copy of the book and the resources that are out there and available for these groups as they pick them up, or church leaders as they want to do this in their church?
We tried to make everything as simple as possible to get. So if you go to leadwithprayer.com, that's where we have all the supplemental resources. One of the other things that we, a friend created an assessment to kind of understand where are you in your prayer journey? Where do you want to grow? And how do you see the organization? And it's a really cool way where you can go through this and then compare your results to others within your organization. So there's a prayer assessment that is a great, great place. There's a template to use for some other prayer practices. So all of that is available at leadwithprayer.com.
Yeah, there's also tools for your organization as well to lead your organization to become more of a praying culture. So it's exciting, both personal and organizational there.
Okay, guys, the last question I have to ask you is an advice question. I'm going to ask you to go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, except I get to name the season of life that you're in. And so I was really thinking about this because all three of you guys are very different guys, but at the end of the day, you're all leading at really high levels. You all have that kind of title of president or CEO. And so I want to take you back to the first day in your role ever, first time ever as a president or CEO, that younger version of yourself. If you could go back in time and sit knee to knee with that younger you, hold his hand, look him in the eye, and give him one piece of advice, what's the one thing you're going to tell him? And Peter, I'm going to ask you to go first.
Yeah, I would say you are not on this journey alone. And, you know, at that time, to have that word of hope, to look at the people that are going to join the organization and the cause, and to see the supporters that are going to be walking with, that are going to become true friends in this adventure. And then ultimately, again, that bottom right quadrant, you are not on your own. Don't try to do the prayerless striving, thinking you can engineer all of the solutions to all of these issues. You are going to be overwhelmed. And isn't it amazing that in those moments, there is one who is with you? And Ryan, I think this was from you, but the insight into Psalm 23, that it is talking, it goes from third person to first person. The Lord is my shepherd until I walk through the valley of the shadow of death and you are with me. It goes from third person to first person. Wow. And oftentimes that is in the seasons of greatest difficulty. So yeah, you're just not alone on the journey. That would be the message that I would have loved to have heard.
Ryan, what about you? Same question.
Slow down. Don't get in such a hurry that you miss the most important things, and that you miss the John 15, without me, you can do nothing. Abide in me and let my words abide in you. And then the fruitfulness comes out of that friendship. And I think that I probably got it backwards, where I started organizationally wanting to be a servant. And Jesus is like, no, I call you friends first. And as I've been growing as a leader, following Jesus more and more, I find more and more comes out of that friendship. The kingdom comes out of friendship. And as I become more friends with, closer friends with Jesus, and just do what he asks, he takes care of it. It's just so incredible. So I'd tell myself, my younger self, you're in way too much of a hurry. Slow down and let Jesus do it. Let the fruit come from the friendship.
That's so beautiful. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your work in the church and your work in prayer and just putting this resource together. It just, it means the world to me. And I'm very thankful that there are guys like you who are leaning into this posture of prayer for the next generation and for my generation. So thank you.
Oh, it's an honor. This has been awesome.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Thank you.
Told you guys, what a great conversation. I just love the way that they kind of dive in and out of the insight around leading with prayer. What does that mean? What's it look like? How does it show up? How do people dive into this topic? If you're a leader and you're not leading with prayer, this is a tremendous resource to get in your hand. As always, guys, I'm thankful for you, our entire Follow the Number 2 Lead community. Don't forget, sign up for our newsletter, support our sponsors. Thank you guys so much. So thankful for all the ways that God is working in your life. And remember, if you want to follow Jesus, you must be willing to move.